You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on Monday, September 10th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and in the studio now are Pat McClear and Rich Moniak. We're going to be talking about the new season of Mudrooms 2018-2019, and also Mudrooms Beneficiary, which is Family Promise of Juno, which is who Pat is here representing, but also a storyteller. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
It is great to have you here. Mudrooms, here we go. What season is this, Rich?
This is the eighth.
Eighth season. And about how many episodes do you do per season?
We're doing nine right now. I think we did six or eight the first couple of years, and then we've been doing nine since then.
So I'm an English major. What's the math on that? About how many shows do you
You know, I don't know how many shows. I can tell you we've had over 300 storytellers.
Great.
300 different storytellers. You know, and we've had some people. Pat's been told more than one. We've had more than a few people come back once a year. But 300 total storytellers.
Wow.
That is a wow when you think of the population of Juno and that number.
Times 7 minutes. Do the math on that.
Yeah. I'm a librarian. The only math was Dewey Decimal. That ain't working here.
Pat, what inspired you to tell your first story? What was it about Mudrooms that you liked?
It was a colleague at Floyd Dryden who had been to a Mudrooms, and then she came back and she said, Pat, the stage is for you. And that was a compliment because I would go into classrooms to tell stories to students. And this was a teacher, Mary Capobianco, who had welcomed me into her classroom on more than one occasion. So she knew me as a storyteller. And when she became aware of Mudrooms, she said, got to do it. And so I did.
What was your first story about?
Boston Red Sox and my father.
And how many have you told now?
I have told four, and tomorrow evening will be number five.
Rich, how about you?
I've done one on Mudrooms and one at an event similar to Mudrooms, and the Mudrooms one was the first season.
And you're on the board, right?
The
storyboard, as you say?
Yeah.
What keeps you going? What's the power? Is the power of storytelling? What makes you volunteer your time for them?
Well, you know, I'm not somebody who likes the stage. You know, I don't want to be on the stage very often. But I decided to do that first year because I love stories. I love personal stories. You know, I think personal stories, you know, when we tell a personal story, we become a character in our own biography, you know, and a character in somebody else's biography when they're telling a story that we're in. And when they weave together, you know, they form the basis of our commonality, you know. We're all human. We all have stories. And there's a quote that – I worked for an organization in Seattle that was structured around storytelling for soldiers and victims of war as a healing process for people. And I came across a quote while I was at that program by an American poet, Muriel Rukeyser. Yeah. And she said, the universe is made up of stories, not atoms. You know, and that's really the way I feel about it is we're alive because of stories, not because of molecules.
So the season starts tomorrow, is that correct?
Yeah.
Tuesday night, 7 p.m.?
7 p.m.
At Northern Light United Church?
That's correct.
Okay, we have a clip of a story here. I found one of my co-hosts here on a Juno afternoon, Ori Scandling, told a story back in the first season when you told yours first story,
Rich. It was the third show.
Set the scene for our listeners, Pat. What does Northern Light United Church look like inside, and what does it feel like when you're stepping up onto that stage?
Well, high vaulted ceilings and a beautiful light behind the altar. So you have that light behind you. So you can be saint-like when you are up. And when you the audience is seated comfortably in the pews, I'll say, they're not uncomfortable. And when they introduce you and you walk up those three steps and take a deep breath and come up to the microphone, and then it's magic.
Let's take a listen.
Well, it occurred to me this morning that it was 5 years ago this morning that my mother died and I kissed her goodbye. And I tell you that because really she was the best storyteller of all. there were times we traveled together in cars, and between playing the ukulele, she would tell stories, and we'd go, that was a 60-miler. But for this theme, for the love of it, I want to tell you about my mom and my dad. My mom was 19 years old, and she came into her garage in a very ritzy suburb of Detroit, Michigan, with a box of brownies under her arm. And there was my father, who had driven to Alaska with her brother in a half-ton truck the year my mother graduated from high school, which would have been 1950. Now, my mother, throughout her life, was an impulsive romantic. And she once told me later that she had read Wuthering Heights, and the idea of making love with the game warden in front of the hearth ever remained with her. And my father, later to become my father, apparently making love on a hearth somewhere, had been a U.S. Fish and Wildlife agent, actually a colleague of Jay Hammond back in the early 1950s. And my mom was apparently romantically smitten. They had 10 dates, during which they kissed once, and he turned to her and said, "You smell like VO." That would be like saying you smell like Jägermeister today. He went back to Alaska, and throughout the fall, they wrote letters, and one of the letters implied he would like to have a fishing partner, and 3 weeks later, he was back in Detroit, and my parents got married. And my mother left. They drove across the country, and they ended up in Kenai, where my dad was stationed still with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and my mom lived in about a 19-foot trailer, and not too long afterwards had an infant, me, who had colic. So it went from a very wealthy lifestyle. Her father had been vice president of General Motors for many years. They had maids even during the Depression. She shopped for sport, for just a pastime, to this life on the Kenai Peninsula in a trailer, really kind of a trailer you hooked on the back of a truck and took places. So I'm going to zoom ahead. My mother had 3 children in 3 years, not unlike women of her generation. It's, as she said, well, you had an experience, and her experience was going to college for 1 year and then Europe, and then you got married. That was just expected. And by age 27, she had 4 children.
And so I'm going to pause that here, but at the end of our interview, I'll play the rest of it for our
such
listeners.
Such a tease.
You know, the thing I think about that audience, too, I think of it sort of like a folk fest audience, like a very nice, ready-to-laugh, clap, support-you kind of audience. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter the substance of the story, because folks are listening. They're hanging on your word. So you could be talking about something that broke your heart, or you could talk about something that made you laugh so hard you wet your pants. But either way, the audience is with you.
How would you say they break down between crying and laughing?
Oh.
I seem to have done both at many shows.
Absolutely. And that's part of the joy of being a member of the audience. You don't know what's coming. When they announce who is next to be at the microphone, you don't know if you're going to end up crying or laughing or doing both. Or you look at the person and say, whoa, I had no idea.
And saying that about your fellow community members, we learn so much, don't we, Rich?
Oh, we definitely do. I mean, you know, and what Pat's saying about you can laugh and cry at the same time. You know, some stories are really set up well so that you think you're going to be laughing by the time you're done. And then it's oh, wow, and this is a person I've known, I've seen in town. And now you've got a whole different outlook on who they are, a whole different understanding of why they're here and what they're about.
Stories reveal so much about us, don't they?
And as the audience member, you can end up saying, "Hi, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one."
Yeah, a lot of the stories do that. They'll trigger something in your own memory, you know. And I think that's the interesting thing about telling stories is, you know, they don't come to us in any particular order at any particular time. They're all triggered by something, you know. So the audience gets a look at themselves in some sort of reflection based upon different stories. Different stories will resonate differently with everybody.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah.
It's like group therapy almost.
An enjoyable, entertaining group therapy, yeah. Only for $7.
Yeah, $7. So it starts this Tuesday, and then you're about once a month, is that
once
right?
Once a month, yeah. Every second Tuesday of the month.
At Northern Light United Church every time?
Every time, yes.
Okay. What's the theme for this Tuesday?
Lost and Found.
Okay. And in a month, oh, and I'm assuming
I've got the
you
storytellers.
Have,
if
oh,
you,
yeah, yeah, please do. Please
yeah.
do.
So, well, Pat's one of them, of course. Terry Stage Harvey, Brett Dillingham, Phil Campbell, and this will be Phil's last. Phil's been on the show a couple of times, and, of course, he's the pastor of Northern Light, but he's leaving soon. So this will be his last time. Eli Barcy, Tyler Smoker, and Steve Lewis.
Okay. Pat, can you tease your story a little bit? Lost and Found.
I once was lost, but now I'm found. That's all you're getting out of me.
Well, looking forward to that for sure. What is the theme of, let's see, I guess it would be September, October.
Well, October, it's karma.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things I should mention before we get going, we don't have a single storyteller lined up for October yet.
For karma?
For karma.
Like K-A-R-M-A, karma.
Yeah, that's
oh,
right.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and you know, that's the biggest struggle we have as a board is, and the whole program is finding storytellers. You know, and we would love to have more newcomers, you know, introduce more people into the audience and introverts. You know, we don't want all the people who love being on stage. We don't get to know people who don't want to be known if you know, they don't want to be up there a little bit.
I mean, you just told us a few minutes ago that you don't like being up on stage.
I don't. No, I don't like being up on stage much. I'd rather, you know, I sit in the back and do the recording.
So what would be your message to fellow introverts listening right now? What would you say to them to convince them to call you or go online and come up in October?
Well, it's an intimidating thing for even people I know that are comfortable on stage. But what happened when I did it is I was a nervous wreck. You know, I was the last one that night. And I left at intermission and came back just in time to get up.
Oh my.
And tell my story because I needed to walk around and relax. But as soon as I got up there and started talking, because the story is your story, you know, there isn't any right or wrong. No one's going to judge you on it. You know, you're not up there. It tells itself. And I felt so relaxed at a certain point that I forgot I was even telling it. It just comes out, you know, and it was pretty simple, pretty easy. I still think I'd be nervous about going up there, but I've been ready to go up. And I did a story at a mudroom sort of inspired program for, about healthcare last summer, you know, and I didn't have any trouble with that at all. So it's not as intimidating as it seems, and it's a really rewarding feeling once you've done it.
And Pat, I know you've been part of the story.
The Story Factory.
So somebody could actually come and work with you.
Well, the first one will be on Tuesday the 18th at 6 p.m. at Northern Light United Church. And it is a storytelling workshop. I, however, will be in Ireland. Oh, so hard. But Tom Cosgrove will be there. And at that time, there's no cost and there's no RSVP necessary. But folks who are willing will receive some practical tips, lots of encouragement, and are just asked to come with the story you're working on, an idea for a story, and you'll get coached through it so that you can walk up those steps at Northern Light and approach the mic with some confidence.
That seems like that would be a helpful thing to do for someone who hasn't told a story, but not necessary, right?
Not necessary, no, but it is helpful. And it you know, the other thing that would help is just to come and see it. And talk to other people who have told stories.
And that workshop is at Northern Light,
correct,
right?
Correct, yes.
So you could essentially walk up onto that stage and practice from the spot where mm-hmm. you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That seems helpful.
And last year maybe there were 3-4 story factories. And the first one, there were quite a number of folks who attended. And we all had to break up actually into groups because there were so many folks willing. And I think they left with a lot more confidence than they walked in. And again, with tips and encouragement, and you can do this.
Wow. For more information about Tuesday night, tomorrow night, and also this workshop, where can people go?
Mudrooms.org.
Okay.
And we've got a Facebook site. But the mudrooms.org has the schedule for the rest of the year. It's also got another way that you can, you know, think about how you'll tell your own story. It's got an index of every storyteller that's been on the stage.
And you can listen to them all. Those MP3s.
You can find a friend of yours. You can find somebody you know who told a story. Look them up by name and listen to their story. And you know, it helps. The 7 minute is one of the things that does intimidate some people. It's like, can I get the story in 7 minutes? They get nervous about that. But when you start listening to me, you realize that it's not that hard.
One more question, going back to the craft of storytelling. You know, as a writer, I believe in revise. It's such an important part of writing.
It's a pain.
Is that true for storytelling too?
Yes, particularly the stories about our own lives and when they tell you 7 minutes and you say, wow, that's so long. And then you start writing down your story and timing yourself and say, whoa, I got to cut this, I got to cut that, and revise. And what you might allude to something and say, oh, there's like three people in the audience who know what I'm talking about, and I might want to take that out and put in something else. There's revising, yes. For me, there certainly has been revising.
But we do that naturally anyways. If we've told a story over and over again to our friends, it's never the same.
Sure.
It gets revised partly because of our memory changes and other things influence it, but we also embellish a little bit more. We correct and we say, gee, I should have mentioned that as part of the story. So we tell it the next time. So we're always revising our stories.
All right. Meet Rich in person and Pat tomorrow night, Tuesday night at Northern Light United Church, 7 p.m. over there in the Federal Flats. But you might want to get there at like 6:30. It fills up.
And it fills up and
oh, we didn't get to talk about Family Promise yet.
Right.
So all the money goes towards
it's 7 o'clock, $7, 7 tellers, 7 minutes. And that's $7 admission. And certainly if you can't come up with that $7, you can, you know, make a donation. But that goes to Family Promise of Juneau, which is an affiliate of Family Promise, which is a national organization. And we offer housing and food, shelter services to children and their families who are experiencing homelessness. So the monies that you pay at the door will go to support Family Promise of Juneau.
And this show is going to put us over $100,000 in donations to charities in town.
So all proceeds go to support fighting basically homelessness for children
families. Yes.
Give us a quick sketch of Family Promise in Juneau. Which churches participate? Where is it happening?
We are most grateful for Chapel by the Lake because they allow us to use a day center for free. So the families all have lockers. There's a day room. There's laundry facilities. There's showers. There's a computer access. So during the day, folks can, you know, take care of their clothing. The kids are at the day center. They can work at the computer. There's staff there to help them go through all the hoops and red tape of trying to get housing, employment, health care for things, education. And we have a 14-passenger van. Therefore, we can only house 14 people because then you are at 5 o'clock. A volunteer will drive the van to whichever congregation in town will house the family for that week. So last week they were at Church of the Nazarene. The folks at the Church of the Nazarene would meet them, greet them, share a meal with them, spend the night with them. And the next morning at 6:30, the van driver again picks them up and brings them back to the day center. The kids catch the bus, go to school. And there are multiple congregations in town that take a week at a time, some 2 weeks at a time, to provide housing and volunteers to care for, to provide hospitality to these children and their families.
Well, we could spend a lot more time talking about Family Promise of Juneau. And where can we find more information on that organization?
Well, We also have a Facebook page, and what I was told is the new web page should go up tomorrow. So we'll hope that is. But it's familypromisejuno.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the voice of Pat McClear. She's telling a story tomorrow night, Tuesday night, Northern Light United Church, 7 p.m. Probably get there 6:30, $7 to get in. And every $7 will be going to Family Promise of Juno this season. Rich Moniak was also in the studio with us, is in the studio with us. Rich, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having us.
Learn more on mudrooms.org. Should we hear the rest of Lori's story here?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, you two.
Thank
we'll see you.
You
tomorrow night.
Been more different. I once said to my mother, so if you were going to have your ashes anywhere, where would that be? And she said, at the Hudson Bay Shopping Mall in Detroit. Now, for my father, he said, well, I'd want to have somebody pack him up on a saddlebag of a horse, and that string of horses would go up into the Brooks Range and just leave me there. My parents had virtually diametrically opposed ideas of what fun was. What pleasure was, what pastime was. My father was a completely outdoor person, and I'm not kidding when I say I never played youth soccer. I mean, we were outdoors shooting pistols and bows and arrows, and that was just our life, hiking, hunting, fishing. And my mother's idea of sport, again, was shopping. Well, when I was 30 years old, I had infant twins, so I was vulnerable anyway. If you've ever had two babies at once, you're pretty fragile. They were little, and my mother called and said, I'm leaving your father, and I, like Virginia Woolf says, I want a room of one's own. And she did, and she had that room in Arizona, which was pretty far from the Kenai Peninsula at that point. So my parents ended up actually living apart for some years. They didn't get divorced. They lived apart until, at age 64 years old, after 37 years of marriage, which included conjugal visits between my parents when my father drove to Arizona during the winter time, he came out of the closet as a gay man. Now, let me tell you that theoretically, when other people are gay, it's great. When it's somebody that you thought you knew for your entire life, it's an adjustment. As my husband said, that's like saying John Wayne is gay. Now I kind of think maybe that's possible. There's no one now that would surprise me. My dad, I swear, was Mr. Alaska. We called him Mr. Alaska. He was the most virile person I think I ever knew. But you can only imagine from my mother, who said, thanks a lot, 37 years, now I'm old and fat. I was young and beautiful at one time. Why didn't you just tell me then? And I asked that directly to my father. I said, you owe me some answers. And what he said was, hey, you know, it was World War II. Talk about don't ask, don't tell. That's not going to happen. And he said, and I really liked your mom a lot. She's really my best friend. And I really wanted to have children. So my parents were apart, and my father had a wonderful boyfriend, great guy, we loved him. And then my mother had a heart attack, and my parents had been divorced, and my mother said, would you remarry me for health insurance? And he said yes. So the three of them were at the wedding together, and she moved in with the two of them, and they nursed her back to health. And then she moved back to Arizona. She had come back to Alaska for her recovery. And then my dad moved down to Arizona with his partner. And my mother got this most wonderful apartment. If you've ever been to Bisbee, Arizona, it's an old mining town, not too unlike Juneau in so many ways. And she was getting ready to move in, and I went down to see her cute apartment with raw brick walls and just beams showing, really cute. And my dad was diagnosed with cancer. She never did unpack those boxes. She moved in with him. By then, he was not living with John anymore, and slept on the floor by his bed as she cared for him until he died. And that was for the love of it. Thank you.